This is Aaron Stone from My Epic, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say
you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
So where are you from originally?
I'm originally from what they call the DMV, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. I was born in D.C. and lived in Maryland as a little kid. Most of my life has been in Virginia, Northern Virginia. But I lived in Charlotte, North Carolina for most of kind of the band's. We started at college, but really when the band got signed and the kind of formative years of the band were spent in Charlotte, North Carolina. I just recently moved to Louisville, Kentucky.
That's awesome. Where in Maryland?
I was born in College Park, Maryland.
Okay.
And that whole area, Laurel, College Park, pretty close to D.C.
Yeah. No, I grew up in Rockville and Gaithersburg, so.
Oh, right on. Okay. Yeah, my grandfather was a professor at the University of Maryland, and both my parents kind of grew up in the College Park area, so.
That's awesome.
Are you still there?
Yeah.
No, I live in Philadelphia now. Yeah. Yeah, and then when I got married, I lived in Northern Virginia, but, you know.
Where in Northern Virginia?
In Arlington and Alexandria. We bounced around a few years before moving up here. Super Northern Virginia. So how'd you get into music, man?
Well, my mom has a wonderful voice. She's like a first soprano, and my dad was just a music lover. So I just grew up in a house where we were always listening to music, like I grew up in a, my dad's a pastor, so I grew up like a pastor's kid. So I grew up around a lot of church music too, and a lot of people, you know, when you go to a church every week and there's a whole group of people who play a lot of music. So I was around that a ton, at a young age and started like kind of jumping into choirs and whatnot. I guess it was around, my dad kind of raised me listening to like the Commodores, lots of old stuff like that, like soulful stuff. Somewhere in middle school, I guess I started playing in band. I just always loved music a lot, but it was eighth grade summer, and I found my mom's acoustic and started learning to play Smashing Pumpkins and Nirvana and Deftones and all the stuff that I really loved, and MXPX, all these punk bands and stuff that I was into, and started playing in bands then, and pretty quickly with my brother. He bounced around from guitar to bass and drums and still is our drummer to this day, and I just was obsessed. I mean, what I was into at the time was mostly, like I said, grunge and punk rock, and both of those things were pretty easy to play. So, yeah. I started playing. I had a bunch of older guys that were in, like, kind of my friend circle and my, friend circle at church, and they were all older, and they all skated and played in punk bands and stuff, and so they were really quick to show me whatever I wanted to learn, and I just was obsessed, and since the music I like was so simple, it was like dawned on me like pretty quickly, like, oh, I could write songs too. And so it was probably like, it was interesting to me to try to come up with my own ideas. And so all through high school, played in bands, on to college, and it's just like falling more and more in love with songwriting and like as a form of communication. And really for me, it's like a way that I work through the biggest stuff in my life.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have realized then that something that was so fun and kind of juvenile and energetic, like, would be still so rewarding, like, as a form of, like, working through things and connecting with other people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, it's fun to, like, be a fan of music, and I've been in bands too, but, like, to be a fan and then to, like, move into, like, journalism and podcasting and get to talk to people, and it's just, like, that thing you love never leaves, right?
yeah, and it's maybe your understanding of what it was, because, like, when I was a kid, I just liked it, and it got me excited, and maybe it, but as I got older, you know, I've realized that it was, you know, there was a relation, there was a connection, like, the, for every song and band I liked, it wasn't just because it sounded cool, that was always an element of it, but it was the fact that something about it connected, and whether that was the sound, you know, like, the, oh, there's, like, this Deftones song is really angry, and I like that, and I need to express that, or whether it was, like, the lyrical content, like, that was expressing something I was feeling or wanted to feel, like, that, yeah, so it's interesting, like, the stuff that I liked then, I couldn't think of clearly, but now you kind of understand it more, but you still just love it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So you said you started playing in bands in high school. You have any good band names?
Oh, man, no, man, if I had any good band names, we would have used one of them, but we, even our band name's not any good, so...
Oh, I mean terrible band names. That's what I mean by good. You, those embarrassing, like...
Oh, yeah. Well, my first band was called JSB, which we wouldn't tell people what it stood for, but it stood for Jono Sucks at Bass, because my friend Jono was our bass player, and he liked to joke about how bad he was. But he did fine, and he's still one of my best friends, and he actually managed my Epic for the first few years. That we were a band. He's a great dude. But my second band, which was still a bunch of the same guys, and he was still in it, we called it the Right Wing Conspiracy, which is really embarrassing because I really am not much of a fan of politics and don't talk about it often. But as a kid, like, that was, like, at the time that Bill Clinton was, like, being impeached and whatever, and I guess they kept saying that there was, like, a vast right-wing conspiracy to, like, to bring him down. And my friend's dad, same friend actually, was like, oh, everybody's trying to figure out who they are. You should say you're them, you know, like, and I think it was just funny to us. Like, so we had that band name for a while, and yeah, none of them were good, man.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of jokiness when we were playing punk rock in high school, so it was pretty tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah. Yeah, and you said you went down to Charlotte for college?
No, I went to a Christian college. I grew up public school my whole life, but I went to this Christian college in Virginia. But I moved to Charlotte after grad school because we just kind of all wanted to meet a bunch of guys who all really had a real serious conviction about the choices we make and the way we live. And we just felt really had a strong conviction that we ought to live somewhere where there's a lot of need, and we ought to be there to be hopeful and to be helpful and to be encouraging, and not that we thought like we'd fix anything or figure it out. So I had helped plan a church in Charlotte for a summer of college. I was like on staff, and we were touring the Southeast a lot, doing pretty well, and we knew we wanted to live in a major city, and so Charlotte kind of made sense for all that. So we moved into a neighborhood on the north side called Optimus Park, and we lived there for just about 5 years, and that's like when the band got signed and started touring in the first couple records. And that was an amazing experience. Like, it was pretty wild, man. We lived in a really interesting neighborhood, and lots of crazy stuff happened. Like, lots of stories. Like, you know, we found crack in our sugar bowl, and there was like gunfights in the streets, and I played a laser tag with a drug dealer one time, and had people offer to kill other people for it. It was pretty crazy, but it was great.
Oh, man.
There was a lot of opportunities to like love and encourage people, and it was good. It kept us humble because you go on the road, and for whatever little bit of success we had, you know, which is pretty modest, but it was still encouraging. You come home and you're just a guy who lives on the street in a bad neighborhood, and but a neighborhood, you know, I actually would love to take that back. It wasn't a bad neighborhood. We loved it, but a lot of people there were having a hard time. So it was a great place to live, and yeah, we were there for about 5 years.
Gotcha. That's cool. How did you guys get hooked up with Face Down? I know when you originally signed, you signed to their new imprint, Dreamt Music.
Yeah, well, there's a website that's still around today, and they're still super kind to us, called Indie Vision Music. And we had a friend who was writing for them, and he reviewed our new EP at the time, which was right when we were about to leave college and we put our money and time into it. It was the first thing we toured on. It was called This Is Rescue. And he reviewed it and really gave it high marks. And then the owner of the website is a guy named Brandon, and he listened to it and really liked it. So he started contacting me a bunch and wanting to help us. And he actually made press kits for us like a manager would and sent them out. And I've never, still to this day, met Brandon. Everything's been through email and phone conversation, but I owe a lot to him. He like started sending out, but a lot of the bands responded favorably, but nobody was ready to pick us up. And we had moved to Charlotte and started touring. And so we were just kind of going anyway. And then in the end, Brandon was like, you know, I'm going to sign you because I just think your music's really good and I want people to hear you. So we signed a small deal with him. And at the last minute, things didn't work out. The timing was bad for him financially. Some things were going on. And so he circled back around to all the labels that he had talked to earlier and said, hey, I know that I announced I was signing this band, but I just can't make it work financially. So they're back on the market. And, I guess Jason had really liked us the first time, but he didn't have anywhere to put us. We didn't fit on Facedown. So,
yeah.
He had passed for that reason alone, but he really liked the music on a personal level. So when it came back around, like, you know, 7 or 8 months later, the timing, he had started the side label because he didn't want to have to pass up on bands like us in the future. And, it just made sense. So, I mean, honestly, in 2008, we just got a MySpace message out of nowhere. And it was, this is Jason Dunn from Facedown, and I want to talk to you about signing your band. It blew us away. Cause I mean, I grew up when I was in high school, I hated hardcore music. Like I didn't grow into that until college, but my friends were all into Facedown when I was in high school. And so I would kind of give them a hard time. So then to be reached out to by that label, but we connected with Jason real fast and, like, he just is such an incredible person, and we became really good friends. And, you know, he signed us to Drumped. We were on Drumped and Facedown, but that was just kind of to signal to the fans, like, hey, this is different, so that you don't put it in and are disappointed. But a couple years later, the Drumped thing just really wasn't, I guess it wasn't working in the way they wanted it to, and so they just decided to shut it down, and we just got a call when we were on tour. He's like, hey, it's not a big deal. It doesn't mean anything, but I didn't want you to worry. You're just going to be on Facedown from now on. And by that point, we were such a known entity that it didn't matter. We had put out almost three records at that point. And so at that point, nobody thought it was weird. So it still is like a weird fit, I guess, to people. But to us, like, when you say Facedown, that's just Jason and Virginia and Davey and Shannon to me. And they're some of our closest friends, and they're super supportive. And I couldn't imagine a much better home. Like, they really back us. They let us make what we want to make. They don't, like, we just send them they pay for us to make the music, and then we send them the record when it's done. Like, they don't push us in any direction as an artist, but then also, like, they've become, like, sincerely some of my best friends. And so it's exciting to get to have lived together now for, like, 11 years and known each other and grown together. So it really works well for us.
What has tours been like for you guys?
Touring?
Yeah.
Man, touring is like, on a meta sense, like, it's the time when you get to, like, really enjoy the fruits of your labor in a lot of ways, to meet fans every night and to know what it means to them and to find out that these things that you're, I mean, like, we try to leave it all on the field every time we make a record, you know, we try to, like, put our whole heart into it. And so to know that, you know, you hear stuff online and that's good, but to go out and meet those people and for them it to be so important to them, to tell you what a song meant to them or what a record meant to them, is just so important. It really reminds us, like, the value isn't of, like, being a rock band, and the value isn't of, like, being an artist. The value is, like, being a human who is sharing their story, and that other stories, other people are connecting to it and finding hope in it or finding answers in it or finding just encouragement or just empathy in it. And so that would be it on a big scale. And also for me, tour is usually just getting to get away with a couple of my best friends for a few weeks and spend time together. I mean, we literally just talked. We drove down to Tampa a couple weekends ago to shoot music videos, that was a 13-hour drive, and we never turned on a single song or a podcast. Like, we just talked the entire way. My epic is like a bunch of just like really close friends. So, I mean, now like we all hate, the thing we hate about tour is that we're away from our families and our communities and our wives and kids, but, and it's tiring. You know, we're not a big band, so it's not like we're making mad cash, you know, but the communal experience of playing the songs and of getting to meet the people and getting to be an encouragement face to face is like, makes it all worth it. And it's fun to be out with other bands. I mean, we've done a few bigger tours, and then we've, you know, we're at the point now where we can just kind of headline our own tours, and they're small, but they work out and they're fun. And it's nice to have the time. Like, the bigger tours are cool because we get, you know, play for more people, meet new fans, and things are a little bit more on the up and up. But the tours we do on our own are nice because we get to play longer and have more time to connect with the fans. So, really, man, it's just a joy to get to do it at all.
That's cool. That's cool. You guys are one of those bands where there's been a few minor member changes, but you basically have your original lineup together again now, right?
Yeah, so my brother's Jesse, and Jeremiah has been one of my best friends since I was like 19. We've all been in the band together now since it started. And then Tanner has been in the band since 2010. And then Nate kind of started filling in for Tanner when Tanner couldn't tour. And but it just made all the sense in the world for him to join the band and help write. So now he's been in the band for about 3 or 4 years. And it was actually Tanner who recommended Nate to fill in. And we kind of knew him a little bit, but Tanner knew him better. So now it's like this big family. Like, we rarely all get to be together, but when we do, it's just such a joy. So, yeah. I mean, even the guys that aren't in the band anymore, the few guys that have, like, cycled out, there's a couple of them I don't see very much, but like we're on great terms. Like, we've never really had anyone leave on bad terms. And then a couple of the guys that were in the band early on in the years, like my friend Matt, my friend Travis, like, they're still some of our closest friends in the world. So yeah, I mean, we've kind of made a decision early on to like, we've kind of had this mantra, individuals are more important than the band, because the band is just individuals. So if you make your decisions, like, not like, what is this going to do to the band or my epic? You like, well, what does Jeremiah need, or what does Tanner need? You know, put each other first. It allows us to keep being a band and keep making the art and keep communicating and really just like, I mean, my epic is a whatever kind of construct, but it's really, my epic is the five of us being friends, relating to each other, trying to work through things and understand things, and trying to make something that we care about. You know, and that's what I care about the most is like, you know. When you're in a band, it should be like some of the people you trust the most, you know, and some of the people you like, I really care about their perspectives and their insights. And so when they like something, or when they don't like something, or when they're interested in something, or when they're not, like, it means a lot to me. So yeah, we hadn't all five been together in a long time, because we actually, Tanner will usually kind of write from a distance and hasn't been on tour recently. And then he's come to a few tour dates, but then Jesse wasn't there, or he played and Tanner and Nate didn't. So we all got to go down and shoot music videos a few weekends ago, and man, it was just such a blast to all be together. But yeah, it's like a big family for sure.
I wanted to talk about this new EP you guys have coming out, Violent. The press release that Shannon sent over, she said this is the second half of a concept project that started with your last EP, Ultraviolet. I was wondering if you could talk about the concepts, both with Ultraviolet and Violent.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for us, we always want to push ourselves, and we always want to make something that we're excited about and passionate about. And for us, it's always like, what's standing in front of us? And then we have to write about it, even if that seems hard or scary, like, because anything else would be like disingenuous. But after we did, Behold kind of had a concept, and Yet kind of had a concept, and Viscera kind of did. And so it was kind of like, what's the next thing? And for us, the next thing that seemed interesting was, musically speaking, was to split apart kind of the dynamics, because we're a band with a pretty broad dynamic range. You know, we'll have like really, really pretty parts, really pretty songs, and then really giant parts with like dropped baritone guitars and like gang vocals and stuff. So, like, would it help us to find some new ground if we split that apart and said, for the first EP, we'll do all the chiller, softer, more ambient, pretty stuff, and for the second one, we'll go for heavier concepts and themes and heavier music, and that was just exciting to us. So, also, we have a lot of fans who liked this acoustic EP we put out a couple years ago called Broken Voice, that for us was kind of a lark. It was just something to do in between. We had these songs laying around that hadn't worked on yet, and because we didn't have a practice space for a few months, and when we finally got one again, all the stuff that I'd written on acoustic, and it just didn't work. So we had these songs laying around, and we put Broken Voice out. We did it on a shoestring budget because we didn't think it would be important, or that we just thought it was for fun. We didn't think of it as a follow up to yet, and people really liked it, and so. It also made sense to do an EP that was a little chiller to maybe as much as we could scratch that itch for people again. But to us, it was just exciting. Oh, okay, let's tie our heavy hands behind our back for the first EP, and then for the second one, let's only do that. So, and then thematically, just immediately, even before I really knew why, I knew that one record was going to be called Ultraviolet, the other one was going to be called Violence. And I didn't even know why at first. But we wrote a song on our last record, which is called Viscera, and the last song on it was called Open Letter, and it was just, had a lot of friends dealing with crises of what they believed, what they didn't believe, some friends who had always had faith that were struggling with it, some that had walked away, some that had never believed, who were considering it, and it was like, well, we ought to talk about that, and if we can't talk about that, then what does that say about what we believe and what we know? And it felt like we barely scratched the surface, and so Ultraviolet is kind of just about that, like, what do you do with those kind of feelings? And for us to say that, you know, going through that stuff has like been some of the most significant stuff for us to learn and grow deeper in what we believe and cast aside. And from, you know, for all of us can say, you know, we're five different people with five different perspectives, but all of us would say that we're not the same people we were 10 years ago. And I think that's a really good thing. I think we're supposed to progress. We're supposed to learn more. We're supposed to deepen in our relationships and the things that we believe. And so being able to wrestle with those things, and Ultraviolet became a metaphor for that there's a lot that's true and real that you can't really see with your eyes. And for all sides, and to just be humble about the experience of growing and learning as a human. And then Violence became kind of a mantra. I didn't realize it at the time, but the last year has been one of the, I have a pretty charmed life, but like the last year was one of the toughest of mine. And it just became the record I needed to write, you know, to deal with really big things. I it's easy living in a first world country to kind of deny how hard it is for some other people. Or also to try to minimize, like, I know a lot of people try to minimize their struggle. Like if they have depression or whatever, they don't want to talk about it. They feel like they shouldn't have it. And I don't think we really get better from not talking about things. And for a lot of my friends who are people of faith, and especially Christians, like I kind of saw this strain of like what I can only call like Hallmark card, like Christian bookstore Christianity. Like you have to deny that anything bad ever happens. And it's funny because when I read the Bible, I don't see that. but like the language of like, you're supposed to immediately be like, everything's good and everything's a blessing because God is good. And I do believe in God and I do believe he's good, but, I don't think that's the way he wants us to process things. I think it's just as important as us loving good things and celebrating good things. I think it's just as important for us to call out things that are awful and ugly and want to see them change and not to hide from them. And I think just as important that we embrace the good things and, you know, call them out. We want to do the same for the ugly things. So it's kind of a record to be like, hey, there are things that you should hate and there are things that we should talk about. And there are things which are, what do we do with these things? How do we process them? And I've said this a lot, but I don't really write songs to explain. I'm not trying to explain things to people. I write to understand. So
yeah.
The songs on Violence, like, you know, every single one of those songs is like me trying to deal with something in my life, or us as a band trying to deal with something that we've been going through. It kind of grew, but it, the more I got into it, the more I kind of really felt like there was definitely something supernatural involved. I definitely felt like God was involved with like how we, with what we were thinking before we even knew what it was, you know? well, one of our things as a band is we never want to make the same record again. Like, so,
yeah,
it was this very, like, and we were in process. It was very raw. And then Behold was almost like a worship record for us. And we still love that stuff, but, we don't need to write that again. If we did it, you know, the worst thing you can do is do something and feel like, you know, whether or not it was super successful, it achieved what we wanted it to achieve. And so now it was set the next goal. So I mean, I think maybe some of our fans are going to be like, oh, this stuff represents some big departure. But to us, it doesn't. It's just there's so much stuff to talk about, and all of it needs to be talked about. So if people really, like, miss a super worshipful, I'm doing air quotes, but I know you can't see it, records, and then we've written those records, and we love those records, and we'll keep playing them. But I also would like, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, like, to me, anything that's true or good is worshipful. So, like, the song we just released off a new record already, it's called White Noises, and that song's about what happens when we have no empathy, what happens when we don't care about other people's perspectives, and when we don't listen to each other. And I think in the long run, that's just as worshipful of a song as Lower Still. But it doesn't fit in the box of what people are used to listening to on Sunday morning. Well, I guess Lower Still didn't either. But, but like, to me, anytime we speak about truth, I think all truth is God's truth. So singing about, you know, how do we deal with, our doubts, you know, that's a biblical concept, right? Like, that's in there. It just is. So for us, we hope that fans will, like, just kind of come along with us and can enjoy that we as, like, artists are trying to, you know, continually find new things to talk about. And, yeah, they all go together in our minds, you know. Like, they don't represent, like, a refutation of anything we've done before.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad you brought up White Noises. How'd you guys end up working with Corey from Norma Jean on that song?
Well, we did this tour a couple years ago. Our friends were in this band called Four Today, and they were breaking up, and they asked us to go on their farewell tour, which was really fun. And they took Norma Jean on the tour too, which was also cool for us because Norma Jean's one of my favorite bands. And Redeemer particularly was a record that helped informed a lot of my epic heavier tendencies. Like, I mean, it wasn't the only one, but like when we talk about heavy records, on the heavier side, like, it was always in, like, the top 10 bands we talked about the most. And when we were on that tour, they just put out Polar Similar, their last record, which I think is as brilliant as anything they've ever done and such an amazing record. But we just got to know them on that tour and really clicked, and they were super cool to us. And, you know, Corey was really encouraging and really dug what we were doing. And so back then I asked him, like, that was like 2 years ago. I was like, hey, we're going to do these next two EPs. And one of them, the second one's going to be heavy. I'd love to do a song. He's like, I'm already in. I'm in. So as the songs developed, like, we always had in mind one of these, I'm going to sing with Corey, but we didn't know which one. And then when we wrote the songs, White Noises is actually the last. There's kind of five songs on the record that are like full-blown, full band songs. And then there's two that are kind of full band slash, like, electronic songs. They're still dark. They still fit the theme, but I don't know if you've been given the whole record yet. I don't know if, did Shannon send it to you or?
She did not, no.
Oh, okay. I could get her to send it to you, but in any case, it was the last of, like, the five full bandy songs, and it was kind of came out on a lark. Like, we were writing and my brother went to the bathroom. And I had this idea, and it was just for the really simple verse, like da 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 da. It was just that idea, and it was so simple. And I was like, "Hey, let's try it." And we tried it, and everybody in the band looked at each other and kind of laughed because we were like, "Will people accept that from us?" You know, it's like so straight ahead and heavy, and it kind of scratched a lot of itches for us musically. Like, it kind of scratched this Led Zeppelin itch. It kind of scratched parts of it. Like Sabotage by the Beastie Boys was like something we were thinking about, and then the end of the song kind of goes more towards like our Deftones-y, like Sigur Rós kind of mashup thing that we do a lot, and it was like, well, people like this, and we just had to do what we always do, which is like, we're excited about it, and that's all we can know. So that's the criteria. If we're excited about it, we'll do it. So we wrote the song, and it was this really heavy thing, and when I first started writing lyrics for it, the first thing in my head was like, it's all white noises. And I was like, oh, this is a song about lack of empathy. Cause when I'm on Facebook and Twitter, I'm not on Twitter, but I see it, and I'm barely on Facebook, but I am. And the internet in general, like, because I was a pastor at a pretty good sized, like, conservative church for a lot, long time in my life, and my dad's still a pastor, and that's a huge part of my life, but also because I'm an artist who's toured a lot, I have a lot of friends who are very conservative and who are very liberal. I have a lot of friends who are super progressive and who are super not. I have people the day that Trump was elected who were like, this is from God, and other people who were like, this is the saddest moment in my life. So, and I'm like, and I really kind of like, don't live on either one of those sides. But I think that makes my perspective maybe has a chance of being healthier because I get to hear from both sides and I get to hear from both sides from people who I love, and I get to consider what, like, I don't, like, just because you believe X about one thing doesn't mean you're right on another thing, or it doesn't mean you're wrong.
Yeah.
And I just see, I remember on certain days, like, I'll just see two of my friends that I love and they'll be screaming at the other side and they don't know each other. But, like, if I could take, like, Bob and Tim, for example, and bring them into a room, the thing that they have in common right away is that they both know me. And if they hung out, I bet they'd really like each other. But there's just so much language, especially with the internet, where it's just like everybody's yelling and they're so offended. And they can't imagine that the other person has a perspective. They can't imagine that the other person has something to say. And I just think that is, when we're operating that way, there's such a lack of humility. And I really think it's very opposite of the way that God operates. When I read the Bible, like, God seems very okay with really hard questions, even being asked to him. Like, a third of the Psalms are David pretty angry, yelling at God, what are you doing? Where are you? And he never got struck down with a lightning bolt. So I think, like, we're supposed to approach each other with a lot more humility. Anyway, so that idea was there, and I thought, when, how much cooler would the song be and how much easier would it be to write if it was two people having an argument? I was like, oh, this could be the me and Corey song. We'll just argue the whole time. And I'll write it. And so the song is really like a parable. And it's almost like what I would call like a negative parable. Parable by example. I don't know if you've ever read any like Flannery O'Connor or anything, but I had been reading some of Flannery O'Connor, and she writes these stories and they're ugly and they're sad, but in the end you see her point and it's something really important. And so the song, like, a couple people have asked me, like, you know, who's right? Which one of you is right? You know, and the answer is neither of us is, because neither of us is listening. And in the end, the song, we're saying the same words to each other at the same time, but we're not having any understanding or agreement. And so how crazy is that two people would be? I've seen people on Facebook yelling the same thing from opposite sides, but they're not listening. It's almost the same words. And so that was kind of the point of the song. Like, this is what happens in the end, is no one's listening, no one's growing, no one's learning, there's no progress. And that's just so sad to me. Once that idea was there, I called Corey and I was like, hey man, what if this is the song? And he was almost immediately like, I'm into it, let's do that. And we were super pumped about it, and I wrote the lyrics and sent it to him and kind of gave him the chance to rewrite his stuff, and he was pretty pumped about it right away and didn't rewrite too much, and he got really pumped on it and gave us a ton of time and worked on it, and it just came together and it was like super exciting. So really appreciate Corey, man. He's an awesome guy. He really is. He's just become a really good friend now too. So, and that was the other thing, like, people know what a great screamer is, but I think some people have missed what a great singer he is and how awesome his melodies are. And so we were like, we really just want you to sing. And the screaming at the end was like, hey, and by the way, if you want to scream, go for it. And he just added that. That was like, that was also cool. We always want to change things up. You know, we always want to kind of try something different. So.
That's cool, man. That's cool. So Violence comes out May 10th. You guys are a band that always seems to have something in the works. What is next for My Epic after this EP? You going to tour?
We'll be on tour the week it comes out. We're doing a small headlining run, about 3.5 weeks, mostly the eastern half of the country. We're taking this new band, Valley Heart, out. I haven't met them, but they sound really cool. They seem like cool guys. So hopefully people will come out and learn the new songs and sing along. And since we're headlining, we'll get to play a bit of a longer set, and you know, we'll fit in songs from every record. But yeah, we've already been talking about what's next, and we're trying to figure that out. Like, even the day we left studio, hadn't mixed anything, but me and Jeremiah were already talking about the next project, and we've got some things we're excited, but I don't think I'm ready to announce anything yet, but I definitely think we want to try to do a 10th anniversary tour for Yet next year. And we want to put new music out again. So, you know, we want to try to put new music out every year. So I think those things, the tour, and then hopefully next year, a 10th anniversary Yet tour, and then some more new music, and we'll just keep going, man. We've moved into a place in our lives where we actually have more freedom. So hopefully we'll be doing more. We'd like to do a West Coast tour later this year. So we'll just have to see. Well, hopefully people will listen to the record and be encouraged by it. There's a lot that we wrestled through that was on our hearts, and hopefully people will hear it, even though it's a couple of our friends that we've given the whole record to. One of the best, most exciting things they told me was like, hey, man, it's heavy, it's intense, but in the end it left me hopeful. And that's really where I hope it hits people.
So scared, 'cause I'm fractured, but I don't feel the breaks. Have I loved too many daughters to ever be whole? I'm ashamed that you love me. Send grace for the hearts that I stole.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.